Welcome to a special episode of Not a Crime. On November 30th, 2023, the Russian Supreme Court declared in a closed hearing that the international LGBT movement is an extremist organization. This move further entrenches the harms experienced by LGBT people living in Russia and builds new barriers for activists and organizations working to support the human rights of LGBT people in the country. On today's episode, HIV Legal Network senior policy analyst Mikhail Golichenko speaks with Ksenia Kirichenko, a Russian human rights lawyer with a long experience of litigation and advocacy in support of LGBT people, about what this decision means for LGBT people living in Russia and abroad.
Ksenia Kirichenko, welcome to our podcast. Thanks for agreeing to being with us and explain unexplainable. How are you today?
Hi, Misha. I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Today, the reason for this podcast is not great, but nevertheless, we'll try to discuss it in an optimistic tone. And my first question is, why now? Why do you think the Ministry of Justice filed an application for the Supreme Court of Russia to declare an international LGBTQI movement an extremist organization now?
Well, maybe just one first thing is that because I haven't been living in Russia for 7 years, maybe I cannot grasp some little details. But in general, from what I see kind of from outside, I don't see any specific reason to do it right now in November. But at the same time, for me, it's kind of a logical step, taking into account in general political situation and what has been happening to LGBTI community, but also other marginalized communities. And we've seen that, especially after the full-blown war in Ukraine, so what started to happen specifically for LGBTI community, so persecution became harsher. And even before that, since 2013, we had this infamous anti-propaganda legislation, but initial law, it was only restricting dissemination of information among minors. It was just administrative responsibility, administrative offense. And then, the more recent developments, they are much, much harsher. And now all what they call propaganda of homosexuality or non-traditional sexual relations, all propaganda is prohibited, meaning that even like what we are doing right now, if we would do it in Russia, it would be considered as propaganda because we are adults talking about this. So yeah, it's just a small part, another step to restrict civil society, to restrict any otherness, to restrict any possibility to organize for civil society, for people to organize. And it just what I think what the current political power is doing, just killing all the dissenting sexual dissents, political dissents, any dissent, basically.
Do you think that the current state of affairs, if I may put it this way, is more beneficial for the conservative groups, or it is rather for the sole beneficiary, a Russian president who just declared that he is going to run for the next presidential term?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that this current president doesn't need any additional support for his campaign. Maybe that was the reason, but actually, I think that I don't think it would be really useful for him to start this campaign, this thing. And to be honest, I don't even know if it's really beneficial for any conservative forces, because it's just, for me, I see it as just a machine that started to work and to produce new restrictions, new laws already by itself, sometimes without any specific reason, without any specific goal. But that's just this authoritative machine that is working to produce new and new restrictions and to, as I said, to stop any possibility of civil society and dissent. But maybe also at the same time, you know, I think that maybe, again, I'm not living in Russia, so maybe the situation is a little bit different, but I feel from what I hear from people who are still there that even general population, they see and they realize that something is at least wrong. They see that the war doesn't really make sense. They see that people who are going there, and of course, like, and I mean, in no way I support the war, but people like men, and not only men, but mostly men, are going to this war. They see that there is no reason for this. They see that their sons or husbands are losing lives or became disabled, and there is no sense in this. So it's not benefiting anyone. So I think maybe that's also the thing. Maybe that's the reason why they picked up again this anti-LGBT narrative to show to the society that there is some internal enemy, and now we will help you, we will protect you from this enemy, something like that, maybe.
Do you think that the immediate consequence would be new prosecutions, new criminal cases, new wave of violence against people from LGBTQI communities, or there's no obvious consequence for the moment?
It's difficult to predict, I would say, because and I'm a lawyer, and from legal perspective also, you are also a lawyer, so you know that this is outside of legal reality already. It's not about the rule of law. But I know, and that was mentioned by the United Nations Special Procedures, who tried to make a statement, who did a statement aimed at the authorities of the Russian Federation. So they mentioned that there were already some raids on gay clubs. Apparently there are already some consequences. Cases of police attacking or targeting LGBTI communities. And not just in this case, not just activists, not just political activists, political in a broad sense. So it's not just LGBT human rights organizations. It's already this, I would say, half closeted community. So gay clubs, which are not about politics, which is not about changing power or advocating for any laws. So it seems that this started to also to appear in the climate in the country. And then, of course, even though it's just another instrument, and of course, every LGBT person, especially every LGBT activist who are still in Russia, the risks for them are much higher. And the risks even for people like me, people who are not living anymore in the country but still have some connections to the country, risks are also there. So it's a question of can we go back to, for instance, to visit our hometowns or not. So it's a good question, and the risks I think are real. And these risks, especially for people again who are closer to the country, because people understand the risks, I know that many people, many activists, they really now decide finally to leave the country, to leave the activism, to stop being even quasi-open, stop doing any activities even online. Not everyone, but many people, they started to do this in order to protect themselves.
You and I both being lawyers and human rights lawyers, I know that feeling when you see your own country going wrong direction and accelerating on this pathway. And it's painful. It's really painful to see that, especially when you understand what's behind and you can really draw parallels between Russia in 2022 or 2023 and some other countries in the beginning of 20th centuries of 30s or 40s of 20th century. And that's very sad. But in addition to this, I'd like to ask you a question. Is there any personal ramifications, personal consequences this particular decision brought to you?
Yes, interestingly, yes. And as I mentioned, I haven't been there for 7 years. So in a way, I'm detached from the realities of Russia. But I was born there, I grew up there, I started my activism there, I started to do my LGBT activism there. I was graduated from a university there. So it's my first home, I would say. And for some time, I maybe stopped reacting that much on what was happening because at some point you just it's just too much for you, especially after the full blown war. But somehow it actually hit me, and I remember then it was 30th of November, and I was in Geneva. It was very a very rainy day, and I was just checking news on my iPhone, and then I saw that this happened, and it hit me somehow. Yes, and it's this feeling that you do not belong to anything, and then everything else is still happening. People are still living. People are still doing their work. They don't care. Maybe some people care, some not. And then here are you, who is, you know, this maybe as a metaphor, a parentless child, a migrant, because, yeah, of course, we can somehow integrate into other countries, we can find new jobs, new meanings, but this is the roots, and you cannot change it. So I think that this part is quite hard, just understanding that your home became even more abstract idea. So the home where we grew up, I do understand that it's already not the same country. It's not the same people. It's not the same culture. It's not the same air. But still, it's hard. And then also for many of us who are still connected to Russia through our older family members, especially. That's hard, as I know for sure. That's my case. It's a case of many of my friends. So even though we are safe and we are living outside, but we don't know when and if we will see our parents or grandparents, because for many of them it's not possible to travel outside of the country, and with all the restrictions and sanctions and visa restrictions, it's even more complicated today. So these things, and then also because my roots, my activist roots, they also they came from Russia, from Siberia, and then from St. Petersburg. It's a part of my history, her story. And I've seen how my former colleagues, my former friends, my former comrades, how they were deleting posts, because that's risks for them directly, but they were deleting posts of, I don't know, 5-10 years ago when the situation was completely different, and we were celebrating our little victories, such as, for instance, we just got a little small decision about change of trans persons documents together, and we celebrated. Or there was the first support group for trans people, also supported by Dmitry Isaev, who is not with us anymore on this earth. And a lot of people, so a lot of posts, a lot of this memory, it's connected to people who died already. So it's that's also painful to understand that it's not just just the erasure of part of our history and her story and their story, but it's also erasure of people who are not here anymore. We have to choose between either continuing writing our history or just ensuring basic protection, especially for people who are still there. And this is more than understandable, because after all, even though I have still connections to the country, but I'm very privileged in a way that I can live abroad.
Yeah, I share the same feeling as you, and it's really painful to see that now my Facebook page is full of joyful, but at the same time, sad news that that friend or this friend received an asylum in a country. And in a way, I actually feel great for people, and in a way, I feel proud for, say, Canada or the United Kingdom, that those countries who grant the asylum do it in a most respectful and fast way. They actually do show great support and respect to very basic values such as human rights. But at the same time, I actually feel pain of losing those great people who are fleeing Russia and probably will never come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the last question before we conclude. What would be your immediate advice, if I may ask for this question? I understand you don't live in Russia for some time, but still you are connected to the country, as you just said. What do you think would be the best advice for people who are in Russia now, who are from LGBTQI community? What's the best way for them, what to do?
I think that, and maybe it's easy for me to say because I changed my home, but I would say that maybe at this point the best advice would be to just to make sure you have a visa, you have maybe tickets with an open date if it's possible. Just make authorization for some of your maybe relatives to do certain legal actions in your absence, and then maybe just at least to try to understand what can be the plan, quite concrete plan, if there is an immediate risk, and really think about other opportunities, because I think that I decided that it's great to try to change what is happening around you. It's great to have this passion, these values. But after all, you only have one life. And especially I think that activists who have been in Russia, they contributed quite a lot to making this world better. And maybe now it's time, unfortunately, but still time for to try something else and to try to find a home somewhere else and to try to continue supporting the community, but either from outside or just, you know, creating diaspora, because I think that this thing about diaspora, which is painful, but also it's also a community. And I think that with the activism and with Russian activists, this idea of diaspora is still just forming. It's not like with other communities. It's not necessarily like with other communities. So I think that maybe that's something that can also be created outside. And also migrant life is not always, especially refugee life, is not very easy. So these communities, of course, will be needed just to create communities, but outside in a safer space and to become a part of other communities. And I think that, you know, maybe on a more positive note, but my experience of migration helped me to understand deeper and to see new perspective and to see why intersectionality actually matters. Because when I was just living in Russia, being a Russian-born citizen with a proper Russian accent, it's one thing. And then when you move to another country and you realize that even if you speak English, it's not necessarily the language that is shared around. So then you understand that that's how people who don't speak the proper national language live. And then you just find new ways of connecting to people, to societies, to communities, to connect to other migrants, to really open your mind and the view of the world.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all what you said. Immigration could be hard, and it's usually hard, but it's also could be a quite healing process, and especially if you are connected to the diaspora. And quite honestly, for many people, being Russian now equals to some sort of shameful background. But there's nothing wrong to remain Russian in foreign countries. You immigrate, you live there. It doesn't mean that you lose your authenticity and your cultural background, connect to same people, enjoy your life. And I agree. It could be a very, very healthy process. Thank you very much, Ksenia. It was a great pleasure to have this conversation. Good luck with your important work, and see you next time.
Thank you. Thank you, Misha.
Thank you, Misha and Ksenia. To learn more about the decision and the overall repressive context in which it takes place, our French language podcast, Pas un crime, features an interview with Natalia Morozova, a Russian lawyer and human rights defender who works with Memorial Human Rights Center and La Fédération Internationale des Droits Humains. This podcast was made possible today by the generous donors to the HIV Legal Network. We are grateful for this support that allows us to respond quickly as issues arise around the world. If you would like to make a contribution to the HIV Legal Network, please visit hivlegalnetwork.ca and click on the Donate button at the top of the page. Throughout the month of January, all donations to the HIV Legal Network will be doubled through Charlie's Challenge. Stay tuned in the coming weeks for a new full season of Not a Crime.